You're listening to Australia's fastest growing podcast network. This is the Lifestyle Pod Network. You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson, and this is episode 120, and it's also our last episode for this year, for 2011. So, you know how this tends to be a holiday period for most of us around the world, one way or the other, and sometimes that means we're very, very busy because we're either busy seeing our families, or we're busy doing all the stuff around the holidays, or we're busy having a holiday. But of course, also for many of us, it is time off work, so it might be a time, if you really do enjoy The Dream Show, to either listen back a few episodes or have a think about who in your family and friends might actually enjoy listening to this show, maybe passing the links on so that people can put their feet up a bit and get more in contact with the kind of ways of looking at your dreams that can be helpful to your friends and family, especially, you know, coming up to a brand new year. We tend to want to approach a new year with a new attitude, and one of the best ways we can do this is to really look at what our dreams are reflecting about ourselves, how our dreams have highlighted what has limited us in the past, and how our dreams maybe sometimes often have nuggets of exciting positive stuff to offer us that we're actually overlooking in waking life. So with the new year coming up, this can be a really powerful time to just not only for yourself, but to help more of your friends, family and acquaintances be introduced to dreams and the power of what dream interpretation and dream alchemy can do for you going into a new year. Our guest today is Gwyn, and you'll hear all about Gwyn and her dream in a minute, because we've just finished recording the session with Gwyn over in Brooklyn. And what do I have left to say? You'll love Gwyn's dream, particularly if you're a female. Some lovely female conditioning in there, which we brought to the surface, which was just beautiful. As you listen to Gwyn tell her dream also, listen, you'll hear a few repeating motifs. So if you're getting used to dream interpretation now, you might want to try to pick up and note some of those while she's still telling her dream before we go in. Of course, as I always say, because I think it makes the listening more interesting, I never know anything about the dream at all. When we start recording with a guest, all I know is that they have a dream that they want to bring to the show. And the way we plan it that way, you know, yeah, if I knew the dream beforehand, we might do a shorter, snappier show. But the point of this show is to involve you in the process so that you're there listening to the whole thing as it unfolds as we go into the dream. And I'm told that it makes more interesting listening that way. So I'm going with that. First of all, mentioning the websites just before we go over to Gwyn's beautiful dream. And the websites, of course, are all mine, and I'm encouraging you to visit them so that you can get even more help and understanding and resources about dreams, more than listening to The Dream Show. So first of all, the website, which is www.dream.net.au, where you'll find lots of examples and resources. You'll also find how you can contact me to book an appointment with me to talk about your dream over Skype, over the phone, or by email. And of course, you can also go to my shop, buy my books, buy my ebooks there, or through Kindle, all sorts of things. That's dream.net.au. Or you can go to my blog at www.janetheresa.com. That's Theresa without an H. For, you know, the kind of things you get in blogs, bloggy talks. Or you can find me on Facebook, or you can go to the Dream Show site, which has no W's. It's just thedreamshow.tv. And now let's get to the most exciting and important part of the show, and let's listen to Gwyn and her dream. Welcome to the Dream Show, Gwyn.
Hello, thank you.
How's your day been? I think it's pretty late where you are at the moment.
Yeah, it's about 8 o'clock, and I just got done with work, so perfect timing.
Feed up and into the slope about dreams and nighttime, and head away from work and a completely different language.
Exactly.
What have you got for me, and how long ago did you have the dream?
Well, I had this dream probably about 3 weeks ago now, I guess I'll just jump right into it.
Yes, please.
In my dream, my husband and I had just purchased a new home, and we currently live in a very tiny apartment in Brooklyn. So it was a huge, huge home, like the home of my dreams, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it was just rooms for everybody, really great. So we had invited my whole family over to stay the night with us for the first time. And it was really exciting, showing off the new home, showing everything to everybody. But then I got kind of concerned as we were going through the home that my husband and I would be sharing a bed together. And for some reason, I felt very uncomfortable with my family knowing that I slept in the same room as my husband, even though they're married. It was like almost going back into my teenage years, or, you know, my young adult years, where I wouldn't want my mom to know that I shared a bed with a man.
Yeah.
So I kind of got over that eventually, and we all decided to go and buy groceries so that we could make dinner together. And my husband decided that he was going to be doing the driving, even though it was an area that we weren't really familiar with. So he got us lost on the drive. And by the time we got to the store, it was too late to bring anything back and cook. So we had to stop at this tiny little fast food diner. And I was just so angry that he had taken us the wrong way, gotten us lost, and gotten us there so that we couldn't have this nice family dinner together. And instead, we were stuck in this cruddy little diner.
Yeah.
So then the following morning, my mom and sisters and I decided that we were going to go on this cheap little day trip together to one of those. I don't know if you're familiar with anything like this, but like in the middle of America, sometimes they'll have these fake little safari things.
I know. Where
it's pretty bad, where you can go into the, you know, you drive through and you see, like, here's a camel and here's. So we decided we were going to go on a fake little safari thing together, just the four of us, my mom, my two sisters, and I. And to get us there, my mom decided she was going to drive this Jeep. So my mother was driving. My middle sister was in the front passenger seat. My oldest sister was in the back seat. And there wasn't enough room for me in the back seat. So I sat in, like, the way back on top of, like, this cooler-like thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom started driving totally erratically. She was stopping really quickly. And there were several times when I was about to fall out. Now, during this time, my middle sister had asked me to hold on to her camera for her. And it was a Canon 7D. And I kept getting concerned that I was going to drop her camera. And I kept saying, Mom, please, you got to take it easy because I'm going to drop my sister's camera. She kept driving really crazily. And eventually I ended up falling out of the Jeep. And it was at that point that I realized that I didn't have my cell phone with me. So my mom had driven on. I had no way to contact her or my sisters or my husband to come and pick me up. And I just felt horrible. I felt lost. I just felt like I could really feel this awful, horrible feeling. And so then I decided I'm just going to start walking towards the safari and hopefully I'll run into them. So I'd walked a little ways and all of a sudden I saw my mom and I ran up to her and she was totally not concerned about my well-being and not concerned by the fact that they had lost me. And I felt this great sense of relief and I just started bawling and I was saying, Mom, you lost me. I'm so glad to see you. And she kind of acted like I was making too big of a deal about it, that it wasn't as bad as I was making it out to be. Go ahead.
I just thought that was the end of the dream. I was going to say, was that the end of the dream? But obviously it wasn't. Keep going. It's
so
good.
So then we were walking towards the safari area, and I found this beautiful, beautiful camera on the ground.
Mm.
And it was just sitting there, unattended. So I ran up to get it. And at the same time that I was getting it, there were these two men walking over to the camera. And I yanked it up really quick, and I said it was my camera. And I heard them say, oh, that was embarrassing. But did you see the viewfinder screen?
Mm-hmm.
And as I was looking at it, I looked down at the camera and it was dusty, but there was no damage done to the body. And the viewfinder screen was in wonderful condition. It wasn't cracked or anything at all. So I'd wondered why they'd said that. So I was looking it over and I noticed that it was a Canon 1100D, which I've never heard of before, but I've since looked it up and it is a real camera, but I'm not familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I started going through the pictures on the camera, and it was a little blonde boy, a mother, a father, and two grandparents. And it was pictures of the family on this safari. And my oldest sister came up to me and she asked me if there was anything interesting on the camera. And I said, no, they're all kind of boring pictures of this family. And then I got to the last picture on the camera, and it was of the grandfather hanging upside down with his eyes and mouth tied shut with black thread.
Oh.
And that was when I woke up.
Oh, I'm not surprised. With his eyes and mouth tied with black thread. Such a horrific image. Did it feel horrific in the dream? Or how did you feel about that part in the dream, Gwyn?
It definitely felt very scary. It was as if the camera had a curse to it.
As if the camera had a curse. In what way? That it had a curse because it was carrying this picture?
More so that, like, it felt like it was whoever had the camera would have bad things happen to them. Like, it had been just laying there waiting for somebody to pick it up.
All right, okay, I get it. Oh, what a stunning dream. I love it. So much happening. Yeah, I'm glad you brought this one to us. Gwyn, as you know, I'm sure you've listened to many of the shows by now, the dream always reflects the 24 to 48 hours before the dream. So as we talk about your dream, and you had your dream 3 weeks ago, it's particularly pertinent to, you know, three and a half weeks ago. Okay. And there's so much in your dream, and there's quite a few repeating themes, which I love, and there's some really beautiful symbols. So I'm just going to go in very lightly at first to pick up a few things as a kind of overview, and then we'll go back and look at a lot of the details. But one of the things that I noticed, just to give the head of the dream, it's like, wow, we've got this new home. It's a dream home. It's absolutely huge. There's room for everyone. And this is a fabulous thing because this isn't actually your living reality at the moment in Brooklyn. So right at the head of the dream, we know the head of the dream tends to introduce the situation which the rest of the dream addresses. So the situation is kind of like in the last couple of days before your dream, you had this feeling of, yes, I can see now. I've either just felt that I've launched something, or I feel that I now have what I want to have. I can see it. I can envision it. And I can envision and have a new place where there's room for everybody, not in an actual bricks and mortar or stone house, but within yourself. It's like, I can see there are no limits. I can see space for what I want to do and become and all of that. So that's kind of what the dream then addresses and goes through the various things in your life at the moment, the things within your unconscious that are for that and voting for it and helping you with it, and the things in your unconscious, because there are a couple there, which are actually obstructing you from achieving that at the moment, and which we will identify and work out and get out of your road so that you can have that. So that's kind of what the dream is about. And there's some lovely emotions going through your dream for us to look at. And also the symbol of the camera. Now, you also at the beginning of the dream, Gwyn, mentioned that the apartment you live in at the moment, or the place you live in at the moment in Brooklyn, is tiny. And then halfway through the dream, you know, when you've all gone out on this family drive with your husband driving to get the groceries to cook the dinner, that part of the dream ends with you sitting in a tiny fast food diner. It's like it wasn't the expected outcome. This wasn't coming back to your lovely, beautiful place and sharing this wonderful celebratory meal. It was like, oops, here we are in a tiny fast food diner, which kind of relates back to, oops, here we are in a tiny apartment. No matter how beautiful your home actually is, your dream's picking up on the feeling of being something tiny and something more expansive. So the fact that you actually mentioned that the place you live in at the moment is tiny kind of correlates with that. So there's some feeling there that what you want to expand and keep hoping to expand keeps coming back to not being quite so expansive after all. And in that particular part of the dream, you quite justifiably get angry about all of that because you're all lost and stuck. It's like, no, this isn't where I want to be. I don't want to be limited in this way. I'm angry about that. And we're going to go into a lot of interpretation around there to see why. And then the next day, it's like we have another go. We go out with a female counterpart driving instead of the male counterpart driving, have another go at claiming the space. And we're going to go into that in a lot of detail. But what comes out at the end of that dream was this feeling of a curse. And right at the bottom of the dream, it's this feeling, as you say, like whoever's got the camera has got a curse. And the curse in your dream has a grandfather figure who's turned upside down with his eyes and his mouth sewn tight shut. So it's almost like he can't see, obviously, he can't speak. There's something, there's a limit on what is being seen and what is being spoken, which your unconscious has noted very rather overdramatically in your dream as a curse. So what we're going to be going into is finding within your unconscious mind some kind of programming or belief that says no matter what I do, it's like there's a curse on it and it's not going to turn out right. It's like I can't, when I think I can see something clearly, it doesn't come out that way. When I think I want to say something, I'm kind of stuck with the way that I voice it. That's kind of like an extremely light overview that we're going to go into more deeply. Does this make sense so far, Gwyn?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. That's dead on.
Okay, that's great. That's lovely. So I'm just going to, as you'll also know for everybody listening and for you, Gwyn, that I don't often actually approach the dream in a straight line. At this point, I'll dip in and out and look at interesting symbols. And I want to go for this camera, which we've already got down at the end as, you know, the camera represents a curse. Or what, you know, there is no such thing as a curse, what your unconscious mind has judged as a curse. And particularly at the end there, that second camera, the focus is on the viewfinder. So, you know, and dreams do play with words beautifully. So we've got this, how do I find the right view? Just like with a grandfather's eyes being closed, it's like, how do I open my eyes and find the right view? And the curse on this camera seems to be that if you look at the viewfinder, the view is that things will go wrong, that there's a curse. So again, it comes down to the view, not just visually, but you know, how you see the world, your view of the world, your perception of the world in this particular area, not in everything else, in this particular area of expansion and getting more space and what I want. So that second camera, although you did some research afterwards and found out that an 1100D did exist, and it is a real camera, I'm interested in the number. So I'm going to, like with all numbers and dreams, take off the zeros and go to that 11. And one of my gut feels is that this may either refer to when you were 11. That's the one that's coming up most strongly for me, Gwyn. But of course, it may also refer to 11 years ago, which would have been the turn of the century, 2000. Now, because although that is a real camera, I'm pretty sure that numbering is correct. And even though the grandfather at the end of the dream, why do I often end up at the end of the dream before I've even done the bit in the middle? But anyway, even though the grandfather is everyone in the dream, it represents something about yourself. There's a strong symbol of family going throughout your whole dream. You know, oh, I've got this lovely house. I want to invite the family and I want to impress the family. I want this about the family. And then when you pick up this 1100D, what's it got but pictures of a family? So even though they all represent something about you, it may be around your feelings and programming from your family. So to kind of zoom in on the grandfather at the end of there may actually relate to some kind of not so much inherited, but what you've been taught through that family line going back to your grandfather with this curse. So if you think about when you were 11, is anything jumping out to you now about family situation or views on life or limitations when you were 11?
Nothing that I can think of. I it would have been, you know, a time when my whole family was still living and my grandparents and my father were still living.
Mm. Okay.
But that wouldn't necessarily be anything.
No, that's all right. If it's significant, it will seep in as we go with the interpretation. And if we go back 11 years to the millennial change, 2000, is that strike you as...
Now, that would have been probably the last time that my whole family was together and still alive, yes.
Okay, that's the last time they were together. So it's almost like that camera, that 1100D, maybe captured the view of 11 years ago, your view about family then. So even though your family are no longer together, you know, and we live on with our parents, grandparents, everybody's sisters, everybody's voices, colouring our opinion. but your dream may be going back to either the fact that they were all alive then and the question of, look, just because, you know, like they're actually not with us anymore. So why are we still believing what they said? Or what, you know, mm-hmm. what they taught us. So it may be going back that way, or it may be other things. But we'll just put that over there for the moment. And the other camera in the middle of the dream, which I did write down, was a... Oh, I can't find it now.
It's a 7D.
The 7D, yeah. Is that of any significance to you, that particular model? Is it one you've got?
That's my husband's camera.
All right, that's your husband's camera. Okay. So that actually may represent, since we've got the camera in your dream seeming to represent views... That when we get to that bit in the dream, that may represent your husband's views, or...
Well, we also just made a film with that camera, so that could have been it as well.
Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense as well, because I was also just going to say that even though he's your husband in the dream, he's also an aspect of yourself, so that would that most probably would relate to the film that you've just made. So that film that you've just made may also tie in with this feeling at the top of the dream with there's just something really big and room to breathe and lovely that we've just created or can envision. And that may either be around the film that you've made with the camera, or you may have made that film with the camera with that same feeling in mind. So I'm just going to go to the top of the dream and come through it now a little bit deeper, Gwyn, if that's okay with you.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got at the top of the dream this wonderful feeling of, yes, I've got something expanded, probably a vision, because we're talking about cameras now and views, and something that I'd really like to be able to enjoy, and it's limitless, and it fulfills my dreams, and it's wonderful. But right at the top of the dream, it's like, right, the first thing I've got to do is bring my family in. So it's like, in a sense, it's like, because the family also, and this is your older family, you know, parents and sisters, it's almost like at this stage, I've got to make this dream right with the family beliefs. You know, it's got to fit the family beliefs, which in general is never a good plan. And as you can see in the dream, even though you're really excited about them coming over, the first thing that came up was this really lovely, and I'm sure we all smiled at this, that being, you know, concerned that they would find out that you were sharing the bed with your husband. And as you said, it was almost like a throwback to teenage years or young adult, you'd be found out. So there's that emphasis in the dream there of, yeah, what you're doing in this part of the dream is going back to, would the family really approve, and particularly to the feelings of approval and disapproval and family beliefs that you felt around you when you were in your teenage years and young adult years. Because, of course, they are, you know, I guess we've got two major formative times on taking on beliefs. One is in early babyhood and childhood, you know, where we basically take on all our parents' beliefs about, they show us how the world is and we believe it. And then we go through life going, yeah, that's right. Oh, I don't believe in that. No, no, no. And then we hit the teenage years and we massively swing the pendulum to the opposite side of the stuff that we don't believe. And then the rest of life is kind of letting the pendulum swing and finding the right place. So in your dream, it's like you are thrown back to, there was a belief that you had when you were in your teenage years or young adult about, moral judgment or what you weren't allowed to do or what you weren't allowed to express that is still in the way of the vision that you've got for yourself at the moment.
Yeah.
Though having said that, the very next bit of the dream is we all kind of got over that and we got on with it. So there's also that sense that at the moment, it's almost like you've just gone through something which you've just began to kick that now. And it's okay. I am actually allowing myself the right to, I am entitled, actually I'm entitled to do what I want to do. And it's okay, you know, it's okay. So we've got that. And then there's the feeling that you want to go and buy the groceries and nurture and nurture and celebrate all this stuff. But again, you know, the camera curse comes in and you all get, you don't know it's the camera curse then, but you get lost and you end up stuck in this tiny place again. So the diner versus the food at home, self-nurturing, nourishment, how you nurture yourself, the one big vision of this will nurture us well, mind, body, spirit, whatever, but the actuality or the projected actuality at the moment within you is, look, we'll just get lost and stuck and end up in the same place. So at that part of the dream, you had your husband driving. Nowhere in the dream are you driving. You probably noticed that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So at this part, your husband's driving, and a husband will either represent something about him that, you know, like his personality, or more likely it will represent, often your husband in your dream will represent kind of like your male side. That's how you would go about your rational, logical, working outer world out there. In other words, your left brain side, as opposed to your inner world, your right brain side, your creativity, your emotions, your spirituality, whatever. So there's a sense that when my husband's in the driving seat, we get lost and we end up in the same stuck, tiny place. So it's almost like every time I work this out logically and try to do this right and adhere by the ways of the working world, it doesn't get me to the right place.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So far, do you relate to this, Gwyn?
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay, that's good, because the fact that your mum's in the driving seat in the kind of replay of the dream made me think that this is about, you know, your male side versus your female side rather than the qualities that you see in your husband. So that's good that you relate to that. So you're doing and you keep doing the logical male, let's play it by the rules out there, which is probably the same rules that your parents and your siblings have. But it's not working out for you. You're just ending up feeling lost. And angry, rightfully angry. So I love that this dream is actually bringing out... Were you really, really angry in this part of the dream?
Yeah.
Good.
Very much so.
more angry than you would ever show in waking life?
Oh, yes, definitely.
What did you do?
Well, I was just being very grumpy and difficult to be around, and I wouldn't normally be that way if I was with my family and my husband. I'd be wanting to make the most out of it and be like, oh, it's all right, let's go here, that's totally fine.
Yeah.
And I wasn't willing to deal with it. I was just showing everybody how angry I was.
Good, that's right. Like a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's totally it. That is it, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, we all have our various experiences with teenagers, but, you know, many people's experiences of, yeah, as you know, many people's experiences of bringing up teenagers is not knowing how to handle when they feel so angry and, you know, but it's their way of gathering the momentum to decide, you know, on what they believe and what they don't believe and on their entitlement to, you know, to do whatever, which is basically a thing that you're revisiting in this dream. So there's kind of like a double sense with this anger, I feel, Gwyn. One, that you're back in touch with releasing some of the anger that you had as a teenager, which you might not have actually expressed as much as you felt. You might have had that feeling at the end of the dream with the mouth sewn up, you know, you should not say what you feel. So you may be revisiting and releasing some of that anger in the wisdom of hindsight. And also, as you say, there's that feeling there, whereas you would normally play the positive, wonderful, supportive, nurturing female role in waking life of making it right for everybody. Look, this isn't as bad as it seems. As you said, let's make the most of this. Let's do that. And that also, of course, is the right answer. Tick, you know, for any difficulty in life. It's like, let's look at the positives. Let's see what we can do. And in the dream, you're basically bucking that and saying, which is also right, no, look, I feel really angry. In order to really get to a genuine place of saying, look, okay, that's the situation, let's make the most of it, you have to first of all release the anger. Because if you've got the anger, you're not really making the most of it. You're not really seeing the opportunities for getting what you really want at the end. It's a false compromise if you're still angry. So I love the fact that you get back in touch with that teenage / young adult energy there, because, you know, that's what a lot of this dream is about, moving out of your way so that you can not be cursed.
I love it.
Yeah. And remember, we're not talking about a real curse. We're just using your dream symbol. Yeah. So I absolutely love that. So I then love that, being the wonderful person you are of, you know, never thwarted, let's have another go, you then stay in the dream and try it with your mum driving the next day. And it's the all-female trip. It's the three of you sisters and your mum. So this is totally now going into, okay, let's try, let's see how I feel when I put the female side of my female side in the driver's seat. Now, funnily enough, you don't put yourself in the driver's seat, not the one that looks like and feels like you in the dream. You put your mum in the driver's seat. And you don't even put yourself in the front. You've got your, I think it was your older sister in the front seat.
Yes, and both of my sisters.
Both of your sisters. And you don't even have room for yourself in the back seat. You're not even you don't even have the opportunity to be a back seat driver. In fact, what I really liked was you were sitting on the cooler, and I thought, ooh, angry cooler. I like this. So it's almost like you go cool off, but, you know, you've got to. What it really means, Gwyn, is that everyone in a dream is an aspect of yourself. So when you have gone out into the world and thought, okay, I'm not going to play by the rules of the world to do this. I'm not going to play by convention, by logic, by competition, by, you know, the normal business rules. I'm going to go out from my inner female point of view. What you've really done in two main things with your inner female is you're actually still being driven by your mother's sense of what is right and wrong in the world. Mm-hmm. and how to conduct one's inner self, because she's in the driver's seat. And that didn't work out too well.
Yeah.
And the other aspect of it is that it looks from your dream, Gwyn, as if you've got the conditioning that, of course, many women have of who are you? You know, you get right to the back. You don't have any say in this whatsoever. You don't even get to be a backseat driver, even when you're driving from your inner female.
And one interesting thing about that was, I remember there was a point in the dream that now that you bring all this up, it brought that back, where we were getting ready to go, and I said, I'll just sit in the back seat. And my husband came over and said, why do you think you need to sit back there?
Ah, good. And what did you say?
I was like, oh, it's all right. Let's just let them go up there. I really don't mind being back here.
Okay, that's lovely. So what I love about that is that your husband in the dream, who is your male side, is actually kind of like, yeah, I know when we go out with our male side, it doesn't work, but I would actually like to support you, and I'd perhaps like to have you up the front with me. And maybe between the two of us, if we get the inner male and the male side and the female side right, maybe we could make this thing happen. So your male side doesn't like the fact that you're getting even further back, and you're doing the, oh, it doesn't matter, I don't mind thing, which is that programming thing that so many of us were brought up with as women. Oh, it doesn't matter. No. I'll just wipe your feet on me. When I'm angry, just stick me on the cooler. just let me fall off, and you know, it doesn't matter. Just let them keep on going. I love it. This is actually, although we're thoroughly enjoying this dream, it's a very positive dream, because there's going to be so much to get out of this to move you forward. It's wonderful. Talk to me about fake safaris. Whether you would ever go on one, what you feel about them, what your view of them is. I mean, we can guess, but talk to me about fake safaris.
I don't believe in keeping animals. You know, I guess it's not caged up necessarily because it's a safari, but as an adult, I would never go to such a thing.
Yeah, okay.
I'm morally opposed.
Morally opposed, that's good. So you're morally opposed, and what I like about that is that you referenced, well, they're not caged up, but they are actually. That's kind of really what you said. You referenced the cages. So, you know, some people, and it certainly wouldn't be me, but some people would argue for the fake safari and say, oh, yeah, you know, the animals aren't caged. They've got all the freedom. They've got this, they've got that. And what you're saying is, no, they haven't. It's actually the same as being caged, and they're still exploited or whatever. So that kind of is almost like the same feeling of where you might feel that something is caged and limited. You've taken this almost, oh, look, it's okay, I don't mind. Let's rather than cage me up, just treat me as a safari park. You know, like, just give me a little extra space, and that's okay, I'll go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the dream, you're going to visit that. So it's almost like you're going to visit that to see, for family time. It was a family excursion. So the females of your family, you know, which have all contributed to your mindset of your inner female, your female side, actually kind of believe that, contrary to what you've just said, believe that when it comes to your female side, okay, we might be a bit more advanced in being caged in, but we're really kind of like a safari park.
Mm-hmm.
Our genuine, your animal instincts and intuitions are caged in a way which might not seem so obvious to you or to other people, but they have restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, where are you in the age? You said you're older, and are you the younger sister?
I'm the baby. Yes,
the baby. Okay, so that kind of may explain the seating in the car as well. Now, your mum, you described your mum as a driver as, was it erratic or eccentric?
Yes.
Erratic, okay. Many people would say, and to some extent they may say correctly, that when we tune into our inner female or our female side, it is pretty erratic to outsiders because it's not logical. You know, it takes a holistic view. You can't always explain it. It appears to be random, but it often gets you to the right place. Not in your case at the moment in the dream, but so you may have a feeling that if I tune into my female side, it'll just be erratic. It'll be all over the place. I'll still get lost. Do you have a training in a more rational, logical area?
Mm-mm.
No. Okay. Were you brought up to kind of explain and understand things in a rational way, to discount a female, a sort of intuitional approach?
I wouldn't say that I was, no.
Okay. All right, so I'll abandon that one. So we come back to your mother. So your mother's driving erratically, and you feel that you're about to fall out, but nobody, that word concerned came up again. You were concerned that you would drop the camera. And at the beginning of the dream, you were concerned, used the same word, what the family would think about the place. So there's this concern about the kind of fallout. So I'm coming back to your mum again. It's not that you don't trust her erratic driving. You just, from your upbringing, it's just that you notice it. You notice that an erratic approach doesn't really get you to where you want to be either. So this is bringing me back, Gwyn, to that feeling of, you know, when your husband in the dream said, oh, why don't you sit up the front? It's almost like what I really need here is a balance. I need my erstwhile erratic female side, which is the female approach, the non-reductionist approach, you know. I need that, but I also need the balance of my male logical approach. And if I can put the two together, then I've probably got a powerful thing, because what your dream shows you is that the male driver on his own or the female driver on his own, it all ends up getting lost.
Mm-hmm.
So you need both. When you actually caught up with your mum, you used the word concerned again. Like you said she was totally not concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this concern is an issue for you at the moment. How much should you be concerned or worried or anxious about something? And it's come up in your dream about concern about impressing people, concern about nurturing people, and concern about how dramatic it is if you get lost, if you don't hit the goal.
Yeah.
Right. And your mum in the dream basically says to you, like, it's no big deal. You're making it too big a deal. Your concern is making it too big a deal.
Yeah.
So there's a sense that part of the curse may be concern, anxiety, worry, rather than just accepting a situation and going, okay, right, let's pick up on our feet. And rather than accept it, pick up our feet and stay here, pick up our feet and move on. I love, Gwyn, that you've got, when you saw your mum finally, that because what you did, you didn't have your cell phones. So there's that part in the dream of, I'm out of communication, I'm totally lost. But nevertheless, you just got up and started walking. So there's that sense again, when you listen to this again, if you go back a couple of minutes when I said to you, sometimes your anxiety and your concern can make you think, oh, look, this is where we're at and I can't move forward. If you begin to let go of that concern and you just start walking anyway, which is what you did in the dream, I haven't got the cell phone, but I just start walking, you did catch up with your mum. So it's like dropping the concern and just getting on with it anyway led in the dream to a fantastic sense for you of relief and crying, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So there's some sense in the dream where the anger that you were earlier on expressing, and I don't think I really went into that enough, but when we go through life and we don't really express our anger or any other emotion, we keep it down there, we keep it down there, we keep it down there. And even though other people don't know about the anger, and even though we sometimes don't know the true extent of it, it does actually affect the way that we respond in the world. And so to have a dream where you release extreme anger is an absolute positive, fantastic thing, because it's doing two things. Firstly, it's releasing the anger, which is good. It's getting it out of your cloud, out of your curse. And the other is it's allowing you to move forward. And you've got that in this part of the dream where there's the relief and the crying. After the black clouds come the rain. After the anger comes the crying. After the thunderstorm comes the relief. After the anger and the crying comes the relief. So we know that in your dream, Gwen, you actually did dislodge a lot of that anger, even though you may or may not have understood why, and it would have been related to the day or two before the dream. You got it out of your system and you moved on to relief and crying. And what came straight after that in your dream was your mum saying, you make too big a deal over things. So it's almost like at that part of the dream, you finally got at a deep unconscious level, my anger from perhaps my teenage years, from maybe when I'm 11, I don't know, from around my family, has been around making too big a deal of things. And that now that I've got rid of that and relieved it, I can see that rather than get, bogged down with making too big a deal, getting too concerned about micro issues. If I can just, which is a female thing to do, if you can just let that go, then you can move on. And what that directly led to in the dream was the big discovery of the dream, which was the 1100, the viewfinder, the curse. So what that then led on to, okay, anger gone, relief, okay, let go of the concern. If let go of the concern, I can move on, I can get my dreams. So what else is in my way? This curse that my unconscious believes in goes back to maybe my grandfather days and goes back to what you can't see and definitely what you can't speak. And in a sense, because he's hanged in the dream because he's upside down, there's kind of like a double meaning here. One is that you have to some extent been hung by this in the past, can't go anywhere. But by the same token in the dream, it's like he's dead, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, your task is to undo the black thread now, because who's stopping you from saying what you want to say? There's no anger to come out, that's gone. And your task is to take the black thread from the eyes, because who's stopping you? There's no curse anymore. You know, you're free to see.
Yeah.
So would you like to, that's basically it, except I'd probably quite like to ask you if you have a feel for which grandfather this is, which side of the family.
I didn't, but, you know, now that you've talked about it, like my dad's side of the family is very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know my grandfather on my dad's side of the family growing up, because he had passed away when I was a very young child. So anytime a grandfather comes up, I always assume that it's my mother's father, who I had a very close and positive relationship with. Mm-hmm. But my father's side of the family being so conservative, I can see how that would be related to this.
Mm-hmm. And because my
dad, who was also a much older gentleman, always kind of gave us this idea growing up that children should be seen and not heard, and you should always do whatever the father says to say, and that kind of thing. And not in a negative way, but it was just something that we were always taught to be.
Yeah.
And something as an adult and as a creative adult and someone who lives in or who works in a creative industry, it's something that I do see holding me back.
Yes. That's so wonderful that you can see that, and we will be able to move on and stop it holding you back, Gwen. But you know what? Don't you just have to hand it to our unconscious mind and our dreams for coming up with a perfect image? You know, little girls should be seen and not heard. There's the not heard with the mouth being sewn up. And to some extent, although it's a kind of paradoxical, weird kind of erratic connection, there's a connection between being seen and yet the eyes being sewn up as well. It's like we can see you, I guess little girls should be seen. It's like you can be seen and we will decide how you look. We will decide that you are a pretty little girl, a pretty little dumb
exactly.
girl.
Yeah. Exactly.
You don't have the power to open your eyes and have alternative views or, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So You can see, and you know, and you've particularly identified there, Gwyn, in your line of work, which is creative, that you notice that this conditioning from childhood or from grandfather that you never met through your father's side has affected you. You know, no matter where we're at consciously, that's a completely different thing. Consciously, we can have one opinion and know that that is stupid and think that we're working from that perspective. But the unconscious mind is so, so strong that its effect is like a curse sometimes. You know, a curse is a good word to describe that. It's like this thing that no matter what action you take, the unconscious mind has a different idea. And thankfully we have the power through our dreams and dream alchemy to make changes to that, to, you know, to change that conditioning. But what I was really saying was I love that you've identified in particular your work, which is creative, as a place which is suffering at the moment from this, because that then goes back into the dream of, you know, this feeling of the male side, which is how I relate to the world out there, which although your work is creative, if it is about interacting with the world, if it is about business or how you're seen, it is about your inner male. So we really want the perfect marriage to this. Isn't it amazing with these kind of things that, you know, you probably knew in teenage years, this thing about little girls should be seen and not heard, and, you know, and angry it made you, and how you then went on from that point to make sure that people heard you and make sure that you presented yourself in a way that they saw you for who you were. And yet it's still there.
Always.
What I'd like to do, but eventually, of course, is do a dream alchemy to just simply go in and it's going to be a very easy one to do, to unhook that. But did you want to ask me anything specific about the dream or throw any more light on it or talk about anything else about it before we get to that stage?
One thing that I did think was interesting and was the point where I take the camera from the two men who are trying to get it, and they say, oh, that was embarrassing, but did you notice the viewfinder? And the viewfinder wasn't damaged.
That's right. What did you feel, what did they mean by that was embarrassing? That they didn't get it, or that they...
They thought, because I picked it up and I said, this is mine, and they had been trying to pick it up, so I think that they were embarrassed that they were trying to pick up someone else's camera, or got caught trying to, quote-unquote, steal somebody else's camera.
Ah, right, okay. So they thought it was theirs, but in fact it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then did you see the viewfinder? But the viewfinder was fine. And in fact, the viewfinder screen was fine, but it did lead you through looking at that viewfinder to notice and to eventually go through all the boring stuff and eventually find this key fact. So in a way, I'm coming back to the embarrassment, but the viewfinder helped you find the view of what you needed to know, which was the not seeing and the not speaking. But what was embarrassing was, again, a sense of ownership. Now, everyone in the dream is a part of yourself. So the two men in the dream also, again, represented your male or your male side, the outer world. And they thought they had entitlement to a view, to the camera. They thought this was the way that things worked. This was the view. Oh, we've lost our view. We've lost our ability to capture and see the world or whatever. But, oh, it wasn't ours after all. It didn't belong to us. And who it belonged to was the person that needed to discover that her voice was silent. So it's almost like being two men, to me, Gwyn, it's almost like there are so many times and you have tried so many approaches with your inner male. It's like, I'll try it this way, I'll try it this way, I'll try it this way. It's like there's all these men in your dream that represent your different inner male approaches who think that they've got, you know, because you think you've got the right view, the right way to do it. And in the dream, it's like, oh, I'm embarrassed to find that I've been wrong. I didn't have entitlement to it that way. Yeah, what I need to go is to go back and see this thing, this apparent curse, and undo that. And once I am free to really be seen for who I am, rather than be seen to fit anyone else's idea of what little girls should be, and once I'm free to express myself without people saying you shouldn't be angry, or that is anger, or that is misplaced, then everything works fine. Does that answer that?
Yeah, definitely. Very cool.
Does it shine more light?
Yeah.
Okay, that's lovely. What I'm thinking now, Just for anybody listening in that hasn't listened to this before, I do need to define the dream alchemy so you can understand what I'm going to do next. What we do with a dream is we interpret it, as we've just done with Gwyn's. We find out if there are any, and usually there are, aspects or beliefs in the unconscious mind that aren't stopping the person from achieving what they want to achieve or from leading, you know, a more fulfilling life. And then what we do with dream alchemy is, dream alchemy is a process of applying various exercises to go back to that unconscious belief and change it so that it is, it takes the power out of it so that it's no longer being the curse. It's no longer affecting the way that you respond in the outer world. So that when that's gone, as in Gwyn's, when she's no longer has this annoying curse that she's felt that she can't do anything about that is still stopping her from achieving what she wants to achieve, when that's gone, suddenly she'll make slightly different decisions or the world will respond in a different way and she'll get this equivalent of this beautiful big house and space and whatever it is that she wants to achieve in her creative work, which she has not shared with us at the moment, will all suddenly happen. So that's what dream alchemy is. Talking to you again, Gwyn, of course, now. As you also know, there are so many different modalities we can work with dream alchemy. We can do visualizations. We can use artwork. We can use writing. There are so many different ways, body work. And I'm just picking up because you said that your work is creative. Would you like to choose which modality you would like to do?
Writing, yeah.
Sorry?
Writing.
Writing. Oh, that's good. That's lovely. Okay, so I think, depending on what you think, Gwyn, I think I'd like to work, and I think you are robust enough to do this, with the most powerful symbol, which is the grandfather with the threads on the mouth and the eyes. Obviously, we want to undo him. And ideally, what we want to do is undo those threads, find out a little bit more about it, and then we want to give him... And he's not the real person. He's not your grandfather. He's the beliefs that live on in you from down that side of the family. We want to persuade him to a new view and give him a new view so that if he lives on and you're unconscious at all, he's supporting you. So what I'd really like to do with the writing is for you, would you be up for writing like a one-page children's story?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, that's lovely. A one-page children. Now, I know this is dark, and I know there'll be people listening in and going, you can't write a children's story about this is dark. I'll say one thing, fairy stories. give me a fairy story that is not dark. You know, it's all about overcoming the dark side. So I'd love you to write a one-page story about finding the grandfather with these lips sewn with a black thread and the eyes sewn with a black thread. But, you know, you can do magical things in fairy stories, of course. So I'll only give you the beginning, which is that you cut him down and then take it from there. So where you want to take the story is you want to eventually restore his power of speech and you want to restore his power of seeing, but you want those to be a transformed power of speech and a transformed power of seeing. That actually what he does in that transformation, and you might want him to cry as well, you might even want him to cry to dissolve the black thread, but you want him to come out at the end of the story with being totally supportive and helping you achieve what you want to achieve.
I love it. That's great.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So in the writing of that process, what you'll be doing is, you know, you might think that it's a conscious task. And of course it is to an extent, you know, you work more closely with your unconscious mind if you do something really fast. But I get the feeling that you'll want to craft this one. So you're working slightly more with your conscious mind. But the power for you, Gwyn, here is that you're working with very, very stark, dramatic symbols from your dream. So those dark symbols from your dream are symbols of your own unconscious mind. So in working with them, in crafting them, you are recrafting the unconscious beliefs that they represent. So at the end of your story, you've got that. That will probably be enough because you'll find as you go out in life that your unconscious mind will reference that story. The transformation will have taken place. But if you really want to drive it home, you might want to do one of the most powerful things, which is to clear everyone out of your house and stand in front of a mirror and eyeball yourself in the mirror and read the story out loud.
Very cool.
Yeah. Okay.
That's great.
Did you have any other questions or anything around that?
No, that was wonderful. A great interpretation, and I'm very excited to get started on this.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing your dream. That was absolutely wonderful, and I'm sure everybody's going to get a lot out of that, including a lot of tips and ideas for how to deal with their own dreams. I love it. It's great. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Did you find any nuggets that you could particularly apply to yourself and your life from there? I hope so, because that's also part of the process. You know, our own dreams are specifically and deeply and incredibly and amazingly resonant for ourselves. Being the human beings that we are, we can also learn from other people's dreams, because we often share similar traits or similar conditioning. And we can also be inspired from where other people are at and where they're going to. And Gwyn's going to some very special places, I know. So that great big beautiful house of her dreams will happen for her in whatever metaphor it represents now that she's doing her dream alchemy. So thank you for listening to yet another episode of The Dream Show. Our next episode, episode 121, will come out in the new year on the 13th of January if you're in Australia. And of course, that's the 12th of January for just about everywhere else in the world. Have a wonderful new year when it comes up. Remember to share the episode, get all your friends and family onto iTunes, downloading it, expanding their understanding of dream interpretation, and therefore opening up the abundance and success and, you know, just a greater sense of joy and meaningfulness in their life for them. Have a happy new year, and I'll speak to you next year. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
The Dream Show is a production of Jane Teresa Anderson for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one at lifestylepodnetwork.com.